Hello, welcome to Second Chances, the Persuasion Podcast, the sequel to Second Impressions, the Pride and Prejudice Podcast. My name's Grace.
And I'm Tom.
And we're going to go through Jane Austen's Persuasion chapter by chapter.
All right, and today we're doing Volume 1, Chapter 2. Mm-hmm. So let me give us a little recap of the last chapter, and then Grace, you can give us a quick summary of Chapter 2, and then we'll delve into it.
Okay, great.
A lot happens in chapter one, mostly set up, so this might be a little out of order, but I'll try to hit all the highlights. We meet Sir Walter Elliot of Kellynch Hall, whose favorite book is The Baronetage, a list of all the noble ancient families in England.
Including himself.
Yeah, well, that's importantly. That's his favorite part of the book, is the page about his own family, which he has updated himself by writing directly onto the page. We learn he has three daughters, the youngest of whom, Mary, is married to the son of an old country family in the, like, immediate area of Kellynch, not too far away. And Sir Walter does not think very highly of the Musgrove family, the family Mary married into. We also learn that there's the neglected middle child, Anne, and the eldest child, Elizabeth. And we learn that Sir Walter has a wife who was the sensible one, who managed the household and the expenses, but she died several years ago when Anne and Elizabeth were both teenagers. And Elizabeth has been the mistress of Kellynch Hall ever since. We also learn about the late, Sir Walter's late wife's friend, Lady Russell, who now lives in the area, kind of keeps an eye on Kellynch Hall, helps out. We also learn about Mr. Elliot, who is Sir Walter's closest male heir, or living relative, closest male relative, and therefore Mr. Elliot is the heir to Kellynch Hall when Sir Walter dies. And we also learn Elizabeth's tragic little history. She always imagined that she herself would marry Mr. Elliot, but he basically cut them, he spurned them, and then, gravest insult of all, he married a rich woman of low birth.
And, no titles.
Yeah, no titles. And also he overheard trashing the Elliot name.
Yeah.
So he is no longer in their good graces. Mm-mm. What else am I missing? Oh, and then the most important thing, at the end of the chapter, we learn that Sir Walter has spent the family into debt, and they're in a big trouble, and they need to retrench. And we also learn, this is kind of a technicality, but he can't sell off Kellynch Hall. He's got to keep it mostly intact to give it to the next generation, and he can't mortgage any further. So at the end of the chapter, this is just fun. This is not essential, but Sir Walter finally tells Elizabeth when he can't hide his debt any longer, and Elizabeth's suggestions for cutting their expenditures is not buying new furniture for the drawing room, cutting off some unnecessary charities, and, oh, let's stop bringing Anne a present from our yearly trips to London, which we don't bring her with us on those. And then at the end of the chapter, Elizabeth and Sir Walter, they decide that they are going to go to Lady Russell and Mr. Shepherd, who is Sir Walter's attorney, like mostly like his business manager, and they're going to ask them for advice on how they can get out of this horrible debt.
Yes.
Okay.
They rack their heads together and couldn't come up with anything outside of not give Anne a present and not redo their, like, one of their rooms and not give to charity.
Right. Which, like, did nothing to dispel, like, even the smallest amount of their debt. And so then their next great idea is, well, let's just go ask someone else's advice. All right, you want to give us a little recap, or rather a preview of what's going to happen in Chapter 2?
All right, without getting too in the weeds of it. So Chapter 2, Mr. Shepherd and Lady Russell, they kind of rack their heads and they decide that Sir Walter needs to retrench, aka like kind of reassess his finances, reassess his spending. Lady Russell suggests cutting back on spending, cutting back on like expenditures that would maintain Kellynch Hall, to which Sir Walter horrifyingly refuses. And then the next step in the attempt to get out of debt is to simply let Kellynch Hall.
I believe Lady Russell lives at Kellynch Lodge.
That's right.
Yeah,
okay.
Another house on the property.
Right. So they decide to let Kellynch Hall and move to Bath, where they can live a little more, or sorry, rather a little less extravagantly, but still kind of maintain their pride in a way. That way, like, Sir Walter gets to save face, but they also get to save money. Anne is unhappy because she has a bad history with Bath, but ultimately it is just the decision that must be made. And one other reason that Lady Russell wants to move to Bath is because she wants to get Elizabeth and, by extension, the rest of the Elliots away from this Mrs. Clay, whom Lady Russell feels has no business hanging around the prestigious Elliots. And we'll get into why.
Okay.
Yeah, this is really, you said this before pre-podcast, Grace, this is kind of the Lady Russell chapter.
Mm-hmm. A lot of, well, it's interesting because I feel like maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but the first chapter is all about Sir Walter's and Elizabeth's sort of influence on Anne, or rather the way that they kind of have molded her life.
Uh-huh.
And now here we have Lady Russell, in a way, kind of like molding Anne's life. Like, Anne really has no agency in her life right now.
There's a sentence that's going to say basically as much here. All right, let's get into it.
All right,
do you want to read this? What's up?
Do you want to start?
Sure, I'll start.
Okay, great.
Okay. Mr. Shepherd, a civil, cautious lawyer who, whatever might be his hold or his views on Sir Walter, would rather have the disagreeable prompted by anybody else, excused himself from offering the slightest hint, and only begged leave to recommend an implicit deference to the excellent judgment of Lady Russell, from whose known good sense he fully expected to have just such resolute measures advised as he meant to see finally adopted.
Great.
Grace, you want to give us just a little bit of background on Mr. Shepherd here and, like, what his role is and maybe, like, his job?
Yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, he is the attorney. He is Sir Walter's attorney. So what he does is kind of, like, manage Sir Walter's finances, kind of maybe counsel him on legal matters regarding the property, the estate. But that's kind of just, like, his job. And he gets paid like a fee every time he helps out.
Yeah, yeah. This is coming from the notes in our book, so this is not springing straight from my brain. But attorneys wouldn't like argue in court.
Right.
An attorney would probably be someone who would like help a wealthy like landowner like manage his finances.
Right.
As Mr. Shepherd does here.
Was Mrs. Bennet's brother-in-law an attorney? Do you remember?
He was a lawyer.
He was a lawyer. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know though. I don't know the exact details of what he did. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know if he ever was in court.
Mr. Phillips,
Mr.
right?
Phillips,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. That's a good question though. I also love, you know, not incredibly subtle, but Mr. Shepherd as a name, you know, clearly guiding
his lost sheep that is Sir Walter.
Okay, so, all right. So that's Mr. Shepherd, yeah. And
he's a civil, cautious lawyer.
Mm.
Well, we see why he's so cautious. My first, without reading the rest of the paragraph, I thought he was cautious because he was, like, a man of the law. So he's just sort of, like, a careful guy in general. But we later learn what about him makes him so cautious, which is that he would rather have the disagreeable in italics. What is the disagreeable?
Well, the suggestion that you should spend less money, you know, throw like less extravagant dinners or like cut back on two of your horses.
Exactly. He would rather have the disagreeable prompted by anybody else.
Other than himself. Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, he excused himself from even offering the slightest hint and only begged leave to recommend an implicit deference to the excellent judgment of Lady Russell, aka throwing Lady Russell under the bus.
Yeah. Okay, and I also like this. Whatever might be his holder's views on Sir Walter.
Mm.
So, whatever he might think, whatever his opinion might be of Sir Walter, or how do you read this word hold?
Or, like, whatever his influence might be on Sir Walter.
Sir Walter's probably pretty dependent on Mr. Shepherd to, like, run his finances. Like, I think, based on what we know about Sir Walter, is he's probably not a very good accountant. He's probably not very good at, like, balancing a ledger.
Mm-mm.
So Mr. Shepherd probably has a lot of influence over him.
Yeah, he probably has some sway with Sir Walter, but
regardless, he's still not gonna, he doesn't want to upset Sir Walter. He doesn't want to mention anything disagreeable in his presence.
Mr. Shepherd seems to kind of hold his cards pretty close to his chest here.
He's not gonna be the one to suggest cutting a course or two out of your meals. Yeah, and I like this. So Sir Walter and Elizabeth couldn't come up with anything, so they turned to Mr. Shepherd and Lady Russell, and Mr. Shepherd's like, well, I defer to Lady Russell on this, right?
It's like, thanks, buddy. Mm-hmm. Not only does he excuse himself from giving any advice, but then he even suggests, well, talk to Lady Russell, maybe she'll have something to say.
Mm-hmm. But then here, this last part of the sentence is important. So he defers to the excellent judgment of Lady Russell, from whose known good sense he fully expected to have just such resolute measures advised as he meant to see finally adopted. Mm. So, even though Mr. Shepherd doesn't want to say anything disagreeable to Sir Walter, he still has, like, he has ideas about how they need to save money, right, and pay back this debt.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, like, basically, he knows that Lady Russell is going to suggest the same ideas that he has.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to be the one to suggest it.
No, yeah. Lady Russell, he knows Lady Russell will make the same suggestions that he would have suggested if he wasn't so cautious, perhaps.
It not only would he have suggested, but as he meant to see finally adopted.
Mm.
Like, Mr. Shepherd knows what needs to happen here. He just doesn't want to be the one to say it. But he still, like, trusts that it's going to be affected eventually, right?
Right. Do you think this is meant to, like, make you kind of a little suspicious of him and maybe an extension of him, his daughter, his family?
I think it definitely shows him to be a schemer. Mm. And it shows, like, the way that he manipulates Sir Walter into doing whatever he wants.
Mm.
And he definitely, like, plays people around him. Like, he's playing Lady Russell, too, to a certain extent.
That's also true. Lawyers, man.
What do you think?
I think you're right. I think, like, this opening, well, first of all, chapter two opens with this not so pretty description of Mr. Shepherd. He's, another way to say cautious is, like, to your point, like, scheming. Like, he'll never put his neck out, but even though he has the right ideas, but he'll gladly, like, suggest another person who he knows has the same ideas as him, but who will be, like, sort of more at risk by offering advice to Sir Walter.
And he probably knows that it's going to sound nicer coming from Lady Russell himself, right? Mm-hmm.
Even though he does have at least some degree of hold over Sir Walter, as suggested by whatever might be his hold or views on Sir Walter.
Yeah, so he does have influence over Sir Walter.
Yeah, but he's not gonna cash that in yet.
Not yet. No. Well, he's very subtle, kind of, in his manners and ways. He's very underhanded. Okay, let's go on. Lady Russell was most anxiously zealous on the subject and gave it much serious consideration. The subject of what?
Of clearing their debt.
Yeah, how are they going to clear this debt? She was a woman rather of sound than of quick abilities, whose difficulties in coming to any decision in this instance were great from the opposition of two leading principles. All right, she was a woman rather of sound than of quick abilities. What does that mean?
So, she's a smart lady, but maybe not very, clever?
I think it, like, takes her time to, like, deliberate, right? Okay. She is not, like, quick on her feet. She is smart, but, she's not gonna be, like, on Jeopardy, you know? Like, she is not, like, quick on her feet, maybe. She needs time to think about stuff.
Yeah.
And her difficulties in coming to any decision, in this instance, were great because of the opposition of these two leading principles in her character, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was of strict integrity herself, with a delicate sense of honor, but she was as desirous of saving Sir Walter's feelings, as solicitous for the credit of the family, as aristocratic in her ideas of what was due to them, as anybody of sense and honesty could well be.
Hmm.
What is this saying to you, Grace?
So here are the two opposing leading principles, right. Is that she herself, she has integrity, and she has honor.
That's principle number one, yes. Integrity and honor, yes. Right? Yeah.
But on the flip side, she is also desirous of saving Sir Walter's feelings. Mm-hmm. She is as desirous of the credit of the family.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to stay in their good graces.
Yeah.
And she upholds the aristocracy, and in doing so, she knows that, like, something at least is due to the Elliots.
Right.
That they like, they still need to maintain their status because, by virtue of them being an aristocratic family.
Which I think is shorthand for, they should be spending money. Like, they should be living in luxury somewhat. Like, Sir Walter is like, what's due to me is to live in the height of luxury. And Lady Russell is maybe like, what's due to Sir Walter is to live, like, more luxurious than the majority of us, if not as luxurious as Sir Walter thinks he deserves, right?
Yeah, right. Like, they still need to, in her eyes, they still need to maintain this air, they need to maintain the look of an aristocratic family. Mm-hmm. But maybe they don't need to spend, as I've said in many times last episode, like a French king.
You know? Right. That's how Sir Walter sees himself.
Yes.
And Lady Russell sees him as, like, what is his, you know, rightful position is a baronet.
Yeah.
And she does, like, she's aristocratic in her ideas. Like, even though she is sensible and honorable, she still thinks that, like, the aristocracy deserves more than mm-hmm. other people.
Yeah, they are due something.
Uh-huh.
But then it's followed up with, as anybody of sense and honor could well be. So she has all of these, principles of the aristocracy, but she has them as far as anybody of sense and honesty could well be when it's Sir Walter. When it's Sir Walter as a representation of the aristocracy, right?
Yeah, I think it's generally saying, like, even though she believes the aristocracy deserves more than other people, like, that's a fault to Austin. But she is still not, it doesn't revoke Lady Russell's status as a sensible and honest person.
Right.
It
doesn't become ridiculous.
She maintains this fault as much as someone can have this fault while still being, like, generally honest and sensible, right?
Yeah. Like, it's almost like the narrator is, like, almost like, you're allowed to forgive her for these, like, faults because she still has enough integrity that, like, backwards notions of the aristocracy, like, you'll allow that.
It's allowed, yeah. She has these notions as far as one can have them without revoking your status as a sensible person, right?
Yeah.
And those faults, again, are that she is desirous of saving Sir Walter's feelings, even when he seriously needs, like, a wake-up call in his life, right?
Yeah.
And she, well, the solicitous of the family credit is, like, basically she thinks that the Elliots need to put a good name out in society, right?
Oh, I thought it was as solicitous for the credit of the family, as in, like, as much as she wants the favor of the family. Like, as desirous of the... Oh, no.
I think she's speaking for, like, she wants, like, the Elliot name to, like, be known throughout the land as, like, a grand old family,
right?
I think you're right there. Which is kind of part and parcel of that's why she thinks Sir Walter has to have, like, some luxuries, because you gotta, like, show the peasants how the better class live, kind of. I mean, that's a harsh way of putting it. Sir Walter would say that. Lady Russell wouldn't, but she has that idea, kind of, still.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And blah, blah, blah. And she believes aristocrats deserve more.
Yeah. In her ideas of what was due to the family.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think that's clear, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lady Russell was a benevolent, charitable, good woman, and capable of strong attachments, most correct in her conduct, strict in her notions of decorum, and with manners that were held as a standard of good breeding.
So these are straight from the narrators. Like, these are her qualities.
This is what's good about mm-hmm. Lady Russell. Yeah, and it continues. She had a cultivated mind and was, generally speaking, rational and consistent. But she had prejudices on the side of ancestry.
Which is kind of like just what we previously discussed. She has prejudices about aristocratic families.
She is like... Yeah, she has internalized this notion that the aristocracy is better than other people. Herself included. Yeah.
She's a royalist.
Yeah. Which is, so Austin is saying, like, Lady Russell, all these great things, you know, she is a good woman generally. There's all these great things about her, but she has this, like, small fault, which is that she is a lifelong royalist, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But she had the prejudices on the side of ancestry. She had a value for rank and consequence, which blinded her a little to the faults of those who possess them.
Gee, who could that be
referring
to? Ding,
ding, ding. That's the key. That's the key to her character.
Mm-hmm. There it is, yeah.
Yeah. That's why she, like, indulges Sir Walter, when what he really needs is, like, a cold shower.
Yeah. If anything, Mr. Shepherd probably is more clear-eyed about Sir Walter than Lady Russell is.
I think Mr. Shepherd, like, he knows where his, like, money comes from, which is Sir Walter. And I don't think he, like, I don't think he respects Sir Walter as a person or his position in the same way that Lady Russell does, right?
Well, he's a working man. He's an attorney. What does he have at stake with regards to maintaining the aristocracy?
That's a great point. Yeah, this is Mr. Shepherd's job. It's not Lady Russell's job to look out for the Elliots. She just does that out of love of the Elliots and maybe aristocracy.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's easy to want to maintain something that already benefits you. But if it doesn't benefit you, like in the same way that it benefits Mr. Shepherd, why does Mr. Shepherd care about Sir Walter's feelings outside of Mr. Shepherd's own advantages?
Right. And he knows that if he prompts the disagreeable, then Sir Walter might just fire him.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, you're right.
He's not going to fire Lady Russell.
It's an imbalance of power there. No wonder Mr. Shepherd won't say anything.
Okay. She's a great lady, Lady Russell, but she has prejudice on the side of ancestry. She had a value for rank and consequence, which blinded her a little to the faults of those who possess them. So she cannot see the full faults that belong to Sir Walter, even though she knows a little of them. Herself, the widow of only a knight, she gave the dignity of a baronet all its due. I love this. The widow of only a knight. Whose only do you think that is?
Herself.
I think that's Lady Russell's words, right?
Yeah.
Only a knight.
And I don't even think it's personal. I don't think she, regard her husband with disdain. I just think, truly in her brain, the knight, the title of a knight is so beneath the title of a baronet.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she gave the dignity of a baronet all its due. Really meaning, and, Sir Walter thinks he is better than other people, and Lady Russell agrees.
Better than my dead husband.
Yeah. And Sir Walter, independent of his claims as an old acquaintance, an attentive neighbor, an obliging landlord, the husband of her very dear friend, the father of Anne and her sisters, was, as being Sir Walter, in her apprehension, entitled to a great deal of compassion and consideration under his present difficulties. Okay, let me read that one more time. Sir Walter, independent of his claims as an old acquaintance, an attentive neighbor, an obliging landlord, the husband of her very dear friend, the father of Anne and her sisters, that's key to Lady, this is Lady Russell's brain. Of course it's Anne and the rest of them, because that's who she loves the most.
Yeah.
Was, as being Sir Walter, in her apprehension, entitled to a great deal of compassion and consideration under his present difficulties.
So this is why he is entitled to a great deal of compassion and consideration under his present difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
Is because he is,
go ahead.
Well, yeah, so it's even independent of the fact that he's an old friend, a good neighbor, an obliging landlord, that's some new information, is that he is her landlord.
Well, yeah, she lives on the property, right? Yeah,
He's also the husband of her very dear friend, Lady Walter, no, wait, was it Lady? No, it wasn't.
Lady Elliot. Lady Elliot. The late Lady Elliot, yeah.
The late Lady Elliot, father of Anne.
Uh-huh.
Despite all that, he is still entitled to a great deal of compassion and consideration because of his under his present difficulties.
She would, even if Sir Walter wasn't a baronet, she would still feel compassion for him in this situation because of all these claims that he has on her. He's her landlord, he's her neighbor, he's the husband of one of her great friends, and the father of, one of her favorite people.
Mm-hmm.
So she feels sympathy for him because of all those reasons, but even if she didn't have any of those connections to Sir Walter, she would still feel compassion for him because he's a baronet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because of his position.
Right.
And that's because she's a royalist.
Exactly. Okay.
Okay. Do you want to read?
Sure. Under his present difficulties. So what are these difficulties? They must retrench.
Mm-hmm.
They must reevaluate their spending habits, essentially. That did not admit of a doubt. So there's no way, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. They have to readjust how they spend their money. But Lady Russell was very anxious to have it done with the least possible pain to him and Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. So Mr. Shepherd doesn't care about the pain they go through. He just doesn't want to be the one to suggest it. But Lady Russell truly wants to figure out a way to get them out of debt without causing pain to either of them. And we know the kind of trivial things that'll cause Elizabeth and Sir Walter pain, or we can imagine at least.
Right. Lady Russell drew up plans of economy, she made exact calculations, and she did what nobody else thought of doing. She consulted Anne, who never seemed considered by the others as having any interest in the question.
Mm-hmm. That's so kind of sad. Like, Sir Walter and Elizabeth didn't think Anne had any interest in the question of the family's, like, finances, right?
Right.
Like, she doesn't. Does she even benefit from them at all? Yeah.
Anne consulted, and in a degree was... Lady Russell consulted, and in mm-hmm. a degree was influenced by her.
By Anne. Yeah.
In marking out the scheme of retrenchment, which was at last submitted to Sir Walter.
Right.
Like, they had this business proposal that they had to, like, perfect before they brought it to Sir Walter.
Yeah, I love that. Lady Russell thought of doing what no one else thought of, which was to ask Anne. And then they had, like, a conversation about what should be done. And based on that conversation, in part, Lady Russell presented her proposal of retrenchment to Sir Walter.
Yeah, like, there's so many... I mean, they want to keep it on the down low, but there are so many people involved right now. There's Sir Walter, Elizabeth, Lady Russell, Mr. Shepherd, and not one of them and not only one person thought to consider the other person living in Kellyanne Hall. Okay. Every emendation of Anne's had been on the side of honesty against importance.
So every, like, suggestion for retrenchment, right?
Had been on the side of honesty against importance.
Meaning what?
Of honesty, looking at the bare facts
mm-hmm.
against importance, against, like, the kind of airs that they must put on. Yeah. Anne here is being a realist. She's like, look at what we're doing, and we gotta, despite how maybe embarrassing it'll be, we have to spend less.
Anne doesn't believe, you know, baronets must eat 7-course dinners, must, like, ride around with, like, 4 horses and expensive new carriages, right?
Right.
Lady Russell thinks that they should to some extent. Sir Walter thinks a baronet should, like, spend lavish sums.
If there were, like, a spectrum, it would be, like, Sir Walter on one side, Lady Russell maybe in the middle, maybe leaning more towards Sir Walter, and then Anne on, like, the complete opposite. She'd be happy if they closed down the entire, like 90% of the estate or something like
that. Or just get rid of, like, all their superfluous habits. Like, we don't need to refurbish, like, you know, all the time. Honesty is cutting back money. Importance is spending on unnecessary things just to make yourself seem more important.
Right. Anne wanted more vigorous measures, a more complete reformation, a quicker release from debt, a much higher tone of indifference for everything but justice and equity.
Mm.
Justice and equity is just sort of like of paying back the debt.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Let us not forget that there's probably lots of tradespeople that are really mad at Sir Walter right now.
Yeah. So yeah, if Lady Russell wanted to, if Lady Russell was like, kind of wrestling between being like, being more economic with their finances and saving Sir Walter's feelings, and doesn't give a shit about Sir Walter's feelings. She's like, we have to do everything in our power to pay people back, because that is the just and equitable thing to do.
Right. Anne is not blinded by ancestry, unlike Lady Russell. And, well, I mean, you know, Anne is ancestry,
yeah,
even though they don't treat her like that.
That's kind of the irony, is that, yeah, like, Lady Russell thinks Anne has this, like, status to uphold, and Anne is, like, miserable in this as a member of the aristocracy and doesn't actually care about it at all.
Do you want to read Lady Russell's dialogue here?
So here Lady Russell says, "If we can persuade your father to all this," said Lady Russell, looking over her paper, "much may be done. If we adopt these regulations, in 7 years he will be clear." If you guys hear the tea kettle, sorry about that.
It's atmosphere.
"And I hope we may be able to convince him and Elizabeth that Kellyanne Hall has a respectability in itself, which cannot be affected by these reductions, and that the true dignity of Sir Walter Elliot will be very far from lessened in the eyes of sensible people by his acting like a man of principle."
Mm-hmm.
I'll just finish it off.
Okay.
"What will he be doing, in fact, but what very many of our first families have done, or ought to do? There will be nothing singular in his case, and it is singularity which often makes the worst part of our suffering, as it always does of our conduct. I have great hope of our prevailing. We must be serious and decided. For, after all, the person who has contracted debts must pay them. And though a great deal is due to the feelings of the gentleman and the head of the house, and the head of a house like your father, there is still more due to the character of an honest man.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So, yeah.
So, Lady Russell is presumably talking to Anne. Mm-hmm. She's saying, in 7 years, if he listens to our plan, if he accepts our business proposal, yeah. in 7 years, he'll be out of debt, like, clear.
Well, if we can persuade your father to accept, you're right.
Yeah, like everything yeah. that, all of our advice, we've made the calculations, we've looked over the spreadsheets.
I mean, there's gotta be a lot of debt if it's gonna take 7 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess she's, like, also trying to, like, save his feelings, too, so she's not cutting too aggressively, but there's still lots we can imagine.
Which means, you're right, like, arguably, like, if feelings weren't in consideration, they probably could get out of debt much faster. Mm-hmm. And then she just goes on to say, you know, like, it's sort of like the Elliot family, the nobility does not rely on spending money. The nobility comes in the name itself.
Kelly and Chawl has a respectability in itself.
Right.
Like, you don't need to refurnish every season, right? Yeah. You don't need the giant carriage. You don't need, like, the lavish parties. Like, the house in the name of Elliot alone has respectability. You don't have to spend lavish sums to make yourself important, right?
Yeah, exactly. And what more, it's like, what's more, she's like, the dignity of Sir Walter Elliot will not be lessened because he's acting like a man of principle, mm-hmm. and because what is a core tenet of principles? It's paying off your debt.
Right. People, and I mean, I think this is a reasonable assumption. People are not going to point at Sir Walter and be like, he was wearing that coat, like, last season, right?
He's an outfit repeater.
Yeah, exactly. Even though I'm sure Sir Walter would never repeat an outfit. Exactly. They're not going to be like, he's wearing the same coat from last season, like, how shameful, right?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if there were members of society that would point at him.
Maybe Sir Walter's friends. Yeah,
quote-unquote friends would point at his last season's coat and jeer at him.
But she's saying, like, someone who has a balanced budget is going to inspire more respect than someone who is in, like, a flashy new coat, right?
Exactly, yeah. Because it is the mark of a gentleman, a true gentleman, to pay off debts. The mark of an honest man.
A man of principle.
A man of principle is to pay off your debts.
Right. This is the clear-eyed part of Lady Russell speaking now.
Yeah, you're right. This is the actual sensible part, honest integrity part of Lady Russell.
Okay, and then this is interesting. This is a pretty core philosophy, I think, to Lady Russell's, like, life, the way she conducts her life. What will he be doing? What will Sir Walter be doing by retrenching, in fact, but what very many of our first families have done, or ought to do? What is this saying?
That, like, he's not, by trying to get out of debt, it's not anything, like, unprecedented. Like, lots of aristocratic families have gone into debt.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not going to be, like, out of norm. It's not going to be abnormal for him to cut back on spending to get out of debt.
I don't think Lady Russell means this as a joke, but this is kind of, like, funny, you know? Like, what, you know, by retrenching, he'll just be doing what so many other aristocratic families have done who have gotten themselves in the same debt, right? Or ought to do, yeah. Mm,
so maybe there's some criticism there. Uh-huh. Therein comes the dilemma she faces.
Well, Sir Walter is not alone in being an aristocrat who spends beyond his means. This is a very common occurrence. there will be nothing singular in his case, and it is singularity which often makes the worst part of our suffering, as it always does of our conduct.
So singularity, singular meaning, like, unusual, out of norm, like, mm-hmm. against social norms.
Right.
So there's nothing unusual, there's nothing that, society would blame him for, if he does this.
It's not shameful to, like, retrench your finances because it's not an unusual occurrence.
Yeah.
Lots of aristocratic families do it, right?
Right. Uh-huh. It is being unusual that makes the worst part of our suffering, as it always does our conduct.
So when we do something that is unusual, this is Lady Russell speaking, from the rest of society, that's what makes us feel, like, shameful, kind of, right? That's what makes us suffer, is when we are, like, the one singular case, when we are the one aristocratic family retrenching our finances, then that makes us suffer, right?
Yeah.
And which, it, yeah.
Well, that's the pro-aristocracy brain coming into of Lady Russell.
Well, so she says, it is singularity which makes the worst part of our suffering, as it always does of our conduct. So when you act, like, in a way that's unusual from the rest of society, then that means you have bad conduct. That's what Lady Russell is saying.
Yeah. Which is, you know, and it's a kind of like a, which on a more philosophical level, it's like, how does something become normal until one person starts doing it, you know?
Lady Russell is a lowercase c conservative.
Yeah.
Like, disassociate it from what we know, like, our current, like, in America, at least, our current, like, political state. Like, in her era, Lady Russell would be a conservative in that she loves the aristocratic family. She thinks there's something inherently noble about them. Mm-hmm. And also, she believes that people should... Everyone in society should generally act in the same way.
Yeah, maintain the status quo. Yeah, and so that's why it's okay for Sir Walter to retrench, because it's not unusual. It's not out of the status quo.
Yeah, if you can, like, if you have precedent for your actions, then it's okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. But if you don't, if you can't offer that precedent, then you then there, that's a little questionable now.
Okay, so...
Yeah, and then she says, I have a great hope of prevailing... with Sir Walter, convincing him to accept these changes, right?
Aw, well, that's very nice.
We must be serious and decided. For, after all, the person who's contracted debts must pay them. Who has contracted debts must pay them.
That's another, I think, interesting... Like, that's something that she believes in. That a person who has... This is, like, a universal. The person who has contracted debts must pay them.
Right. Which is... That's why she's not... Even though Lady Russell is a conservative, she's not so bad, because she still thinks a person should pay off their debts, aristocrat or not.
Yeah.
I don't know if Sir Walter thinks that, you know.
No.
Why do we even have to pay for anything?
Well, clearly he didn't, because now he's racked up so much debt that he can't ignore it anymore. Uh-huh. Anyway.
Okay, the person who has contracted debts must pay them, and though a great deal is due to the feelings of the gentleman and the head of a house, like your father, these are more like the's, like more the gentleman as like the position in society, right? The head of the house as the position.
Mm-hmm.
A great deal of consideration is due to any person in these situations, mm-hmm. like your father is. Mm-hmm. There is still more credit due to the character of an honest man.
Wow. So, that last sentence is kind of, is she saying like the character of an honest man prevails over... making sure that a gentleman or a head of a house's feelings are being coddled.
Yeah, you don't hurt the feelings of a gentleman, right? Which is why she is, like, even though she has these prejudices toward the side of aristocracy, prejudice meaning, like, she thinks that everything they do is, like, slightly heightened. Like, it's not a good prejudice, but it's a prejudice in favor, or, you know, of these people. Like, right. Even though she thinks that we should coddle them to a certain extent... Like, we shouldn't allow them to live in egregious debt, right?
Right. They should still uphold like, honesty and integrity. Like, true honesty and integrity.
And in this particular situation, although we should protect Sir Walter's feelings, we still gotta, like, convince him to retrench because he's gotta pay these debts off, right?
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on. This was the principle on which Anne wanted her father to be proceeding, his friends to be urging him. This is the principle that Anne wanted her father to be proceeding and that she wanted his friends to be urging him.
Mm-hmm.
She considered it as an act of indispensable duty to clear away the claims of creditors
mm-hmm.
with all the expedition which the most comprehensive retrenchments could secure, and saw no dignity in anything short of it.
Right. So Lady Russell wants to get them out of debt, but she wants to do it more gradual and, like, still preserve Sir Walter's feelings, right? Mm-hmm. Where Anne does not care about Sir Walter's feelings. She just wants to get out of debt as soon as possible.
Yeah, because there's no dignity. There's no dignity in anything other than the most comprehensive retrenchment.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted it to be prescribed and felt as a duty. So she wanted Sir Walter, frankly, to feel it a duty to pay off debt as fast as possible.
Right.
Which is very nice of Anne, which is, like, that's very democratic of her. She rated Lady Russell's influence highly, and as to the severe degree of self-denial, which her own conscience prompted, she believed there might be little more difficulty in persuading them to a complete than to half a reformation.
Right.
So what does that mean?
Okay, so... Basically, Anne thinks that Lady Russell can affect this. Like, she wants Lady Russell to convince them that they need to go all the way, mm-hmm. like, do a total retrenchment, like, really cut back on money and get out of debt as quickly as possible.
Mm.
And she believes that, you know, you should just, like, they're gonna be offended when you tell them to get rid of two horses, so you might as well just tell them to get rid of all four, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's just as easy to get them to give up a lot as it would be to a little.
Yeah.
I think that's what Anne believes.
I think you're right. Yeah, she believed there might be a little more, like, hardly any more difficulty in persuading them to a complete reformation than to half a reformation.
It's gonna be difficult either way, so you might as well just go the full length. And it's not going to be that, like, it won't be much harder to get them to do a complete one than it will be to get them to accept any sort of reformation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also speaks to, like, how little she thinks of Sir Walter's intellect.
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, without even saying anything, here we already know how Anne feels about her father. Her knowledge of her father and Elizabeth inclined her to think that the sacrifice, like you said, of one pair of horses...
I wonder where I got that example from.
...would be hardly less painful than of both pairs of horses, and so on.
Uh-huh.
Through the whole list of Lady Russell's too gentle reductions. Too gentle is Anne's words.
Anne's words, yeah. Yeah. So, there you go. There's the explanation. Anne thinks, you know, they're going to be offended when you tell them to get rid of two horses, so you might as well just as well say four, right?
Yeah. How Anne's more rigid requisitions might have been taken is of little consequence. Why? Because Lady Russell's requisitions had no success at all, could not be put up with, were not to be borne.
Yeah, so Anne wanted to get rid of four horses. Lady Russell suggested getting rid of two, and they were like, get out of here. end of conversation.
Yeah, get out of my study.
Yeah.
Yeah, whose words are those?
Elizabeth's and Sir Walter's. Yeah. Could not be put up with. Were not to be born.
What? Every comfort of life knocked off.
Yeah.
Journeys, London, servants, horses, table.
Meaning what?
Like the dinner table.
Fancy dinners, yeah.
Contractions and restrictions everywhere. To live no longer with the decencies even of a private gentleman.
Mm-hmm. Meaning like a man without rank.
Yeah. No. He would sooner quit Kellynch Hall at once than remain in it on such disgraceful terms. I'd rather the house be set on fire. Not really, but essentially that's kind of like what he's saying.
Yeah, every comfort of life knocked off, you know. And these are like truly aristocratic comforts, like extravagant trips, going to London for months at a time, like lots of servants, lots of horses, extravagant meals. Like, how am I going to live without these? To no longer live with the decencies of even a private gentleman. Like, that's low to Sir Walter. A private gentleman is someone without rank, but who's still a gentleman, who, like, makes money, who has a house, who, like, can...
Like a Musgrove.
Yeah, like a Musgrove,
yeah. You're
right?
Telling me to live beneath the means of even a Musgrove.
You want me to live like a rich country family with no rank and no title?
No. Oh, this is an interesting... I think maybe this might have been, like, something that Jane Austen could have edited, because the quote continues to say, no, he would sooner quit Kellynch Hall at once.
Well, this is an interesting stylistic thing I was going to say, and it's a testament to how Austen is like a pioneer of the realist form of literature and third indirect. Is sometimes third indirect will become close that they'll put quotations around it.
I think I remember that happening in Pride and Prejudice with Mrs. Bennet.
So sometimes Austen, you know, this whole thing... To live no longer with the decencies even of a private gentleman. No, he would sooner quit Kellynch Hall at once. Like, this is all restated dialogue. Reported dialogue. This is not a direct quote from Sir Walter. It still uses that he, where a direct quote would use the I. But it's like, and they don't do this stylistically in literature anymore. It's such a close, like, indirect quote. Like, it's such close reported dialogue that the quotations are still there.
Mm, okay. Okay, so, and then it goes on to say...
Okay, yeah. The important thing is he would sooner quit Kellynch Hall than give up a few horses and some servants, right?
Yeah, and then it's sort of like here, like, maybe a light bulb goes off in Mr. Shepherd's brain. Quit Kellynch Hall. The hint was immediately taken up by Mr. Shepherd, whose interest was involved in the reality of Sir Walter's retrenching, and who was perfectly persuaded that nothing could be done without a change of abode.
I just want to say such disgraceful terms. I love that. That's a disgrace to Sir Walter. But here we go. Now we're seeing how crafty and manipulative Mr. Shepherd is. He's basically arrived at the conclusion that he wanted all along, but it came out of the mouth of Sir Walter.
Yeah. How sneaky. How manipulative.
Yeah, quick Kelly and Chaw, and then, yeah, that's where Mr. Shepherd, he, like, comes up. Quick Kelly and Chaw.
Yeah, he's been gone for most of this, this like, proposal. Uh-huh. And then upon finding out that Sir Walter sort of indirectly proposition this, now his head is up, now his ears are perched.
This is not a real idea from Sir Walter. He's not thinking about quitting Kelly and Chaw. This is just something he said, like, in a hissy fit, and sure, and then Mr. Shepherd's like, well, maybe there's something to that, actually.
Yeah.
The hint was immediately taken up by Mr. Shepherd, and I like this, whose interest was involved in the reality of Sir Walter's retrenching.
So he won't take an active role in Sir Walter's retrenching, but once it becomes a reality, then Mr. Shepherd does indeed have a stake in it.
And I also think it's saying that Mr. Shepherd, unlike Lady Russell, doesn't think that, like, Sir Walter is due, like, these certain extravagancies because of his rank. Mm-hmm. Like, Mr. Shepherd is interested in the reality, which is how are we gonna save, and how are we gonna do it in a way that Sir Walter will actually agree to, right?
Yeah. Where he won't get mad at me.
And he was perfectly persuaded that nothing would be done without a change of abodes. Since the idea had been started in the very quarter which ought to dictate, he had no scruple, he said, in confessing his judgment to be entirely on that side. We're doing that thing again where it's such a close reported quote, the reported dialogue is so close that even though it's not direct dialogue, we have the quotation marks. Mm-hmm. It's just like a stylistic thing that's fallen out of favor. Mm. Since the idea had been started in the very quarter, which ought to dictate, Mr. Shepherd had no scruple, he said, in confessing his judgment to be entirely on that side. So which quarter did this idea start in?
In Kelly and Chaw.
No, the idea of leaving Kelly and Chaw.
Oh.
Who had that
idea? In Sir Walter's brain.
Right. That's what Mr. Shepherd's saying. Like, yeah. That's a great idea, Sir Walter. You know, maybe there's something to this.
Exactly.
And, in fact, his judgment is entirely on the side of them leaving. Mm-hmm. It did not appear to Mr. Shepherd that Sir Walter could materially alter his style of living in a house which had such a character of hospitality and ancient dignity to support. This is him, like, trying to sweet talk Sir Walter.
Yeah, this is him doing a little bit of ass kissing.
He's like, you know what, Sir Walter, you are right. If you're going to live in Kelly and Chaw, you need 4 horses. You need, like, 30 servants, yeah, right? You need, like, 7 course dinners. And that's why the only way to save money is for you to leave Kelly and Chaw. In any other place, Sir Walter might judge for himself and would be looked up to as regulating the modes of life in whatever way he might choose to model his household.
Great.
What does this mean, that Sir Walter might judge for himself in any other place rather than Kelly and Chaw?
Wait, what do you mean? In any other place, Sir Walter might judge for himself?
Yeah, might judge for himself in regards to what?
In regards to what?
His style of living.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, like,
so, yeah, in any other place, Sir Walter can then, like, dictate how lavishly he wants to live his lifestyle. Like, it won't be, like, he won't be, like, sort of subjected to, not that he's subjected to anything, but he wouldn't be subjected to, like, the confines of a limited budget if he were to live in, like, a smaller house.
Right. He's, like, it's kind of confusing, or it's a little complicated, because Mr. Shepherd is, like, he's trying to sweet talk Sir Walter. So he's like, Sir Walter, you're right. If you're going to live in Kelly and Chaw, you have to, like, spend lavishly, right? That's just what's expected of the possessor of Kelly and Chaw, the Sir Walter. You must, like, if you're living here, you must spend extravagantly. But if you live somewhere else, then you could decide how you want to live. You no longer would be subject to the terms of the resident of Kelly and Chaw, right?
Right, yeah.
Like, if you were to only have 3 course dinners instead of 5 course dinners, that'd be okay because you'd be in a different house. A different house wouldn't require it in the same way that Kelly and Chaw does.
Right, that's what a Mr. Shepherd would be saying.
That's what he's saying to convince Sir Walter.
Right.
It's not that Mr. Shepherd actually believes you have to spend extravagantly to live in Kelly and Chaw. It's just that he doesn't think Sir Walter can.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that he never would.
Yeah.
So take the house out of the equation. Okay.
Okay.
Sir Walter would quit Kelly and Chaw.
There we go. It's decided.
And after a very few days more of doubt and indecision, the great question of whither he should go was settled, and the first outline of this important change made out.
Great.
So there. It's been decided.
That wasn't hard.
Kelly and Chaw has been let at last.
yeah. All right. There had been three alternatives for where they would go, right? Mm-hmm. London, Bath, or another house in the country. All Anne's wishes had been for the latter.
For another house in the country.
A small house in their own neighborhood where they might still have Lady Russell's society, still be near Mary, and still have the pleasure of sometimes seeing the lawns and groves of Kellynch was the object of her ambition.
Gosh, that's so, like, that's so darling of her, you know, to, like, that she wants to stay in the house in the same neighborhood because at least she'll get to see Kellynch Hall.
From the outside.
From the outside.
But this is great. But the usual fate of Anne attended her in having something very opposite from her inclinations fixed on.
Ouch. Hall. That's, like, such a sad, pathetic thing to, like, but true thing to say. It's like, and as usual, Anne never got her way.
Yeah.
Anne didn't get her way.
This is Anne's fate, that something opposite from her inclination is fixed on. She has something she wants to do, the exact opposite's gonna happen.
The fates have decided that she will have the complete opposite of what she wanted happen to her.
She disliked Bath, Anne did not think it agreed with her, and Bath was to be her home.
Great.
And remind us, Grace, what's Bath again? What is that?
Bath,
where is that?
Is it a town or a county?
It's a town.
It's a town, like a little ways away from where they live now. And the history of Anne, we learned that is that she went to boarding school there. Was that in the previous chapter?
Yeah. No. We're actually about to.
Oh, we're about
that
to.
Here.
Ooh, sorry, spoilers. But yeah, so that is just like a town a little ways.
It's a town on the coast. It's like a fashionable, like kind of resort town.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Bath was to be her home.
Much more like metropolitan than her current.
Oh,
house.
Yes. It's much bigger than where she currently lives. Bath is, it's smaller than London. It's like a mid-sized, it's a city still.
It's kind of a city.
Yeah, it's a mid-sized city. It's kind of a resort town.
Mm-hmm.
It is urban in some extent. Sir Walter had at first thought more of London,
no,
of course.
Of course.
But Mr. Shepherd felt that he could not be trusted in London.
Like a child.
Why couldn't Sir Walter be trusted in London?
It's just too much opportunity to spend.
Yeah. He would get into more debt if he went to London.
Honestly, probably even faster.
Okay, Mr. Shepherd had felt that Sir Walter could not be trusted in London and had been skillful enough to dissuade him from it and make Bath preferred.
So there's some agency. There's some action Mr. Shepherd took to convince him not to go to London.
And it's not just he convinced him that London would be a bad idea. He, in fact, convinced Sir Walter that Bath is his preference. It's not that you should probably stay away from London. It's that, don't you like Bath more, actually?
Yeah, make Bath preferred.
It was a much safer place for a gentleman in his predicament.
Ha, safer.
He might be important at comparatively little expense. So it's cheaper to live in Bath, right?
Yeah. It's safer because he'll spend less, and also he might be more important there at comparatively little expense.
And also, London is going to be full of people richer than Sir Walter, who he's going to feel like he needs to compete with,
exactly.
Right? Where he will still be like, you know, is much smaller. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, Bath is much smaller, and so he'll just be that, he'll be like a bigger, big fish in a small pond, kind of in that way. Like, he'll still be like maybe one of the more wealthier families in Bath, whereas like in London, there's no comparison.
He's gonna be, if he goes to London, he's gonna see so many more rich people. He's gonna be like insignificant in comparison, probably.
I need to buy more horses.
Yeah, right. So Bath, like, he will be one of the top gentlemen in Bath still.
Yes.
And he can live in like a more modest means, and it will still be impressive to people who live in Bath. Two material advantages of Bath over London had, of course, been given all their weight. It's more convenient distance from Kellynch, only 50 miles, and Lady Russell spending some part of every winter there.
Great.
So two more reasons to move there. It's close by, and Lady Russell already goes there every winter.
Mm-hmm.
And to the very great satisfaction of Lady Russell, whose first views on the projected change had been for Bath, Sir Walter and Elizabeth were induced to believe that they should lose neither consequence nor enjoyment by settling there.
Great.
You want to keep going? Yeah,
go ahead. Sir Walter's happy, Elizabeth's happy, Lady Russell's happy.
Anne's not very happy, but who cares? Mr. Shepherd's happy.
Yeah, everyone's happy except Anne, but Anne never gets her way anyway. Lady Russell felt obliged to oppose her dear Anne's known wishes.
Which was for the small house in the country.
Yeah. It would be too much to expect Sir Walter to descend into a small house in his own neighborhood. Anne herself would have found the mortifications of it more than she foresaw, And to Sir Walter's feelings, they must have been dreadful.
Just like, obviously, but why? Why is it so shameful for him to move to a smaller house in front of all his neighbors?
Well, because then, you know, neighbors will draw their own conclusions and know that he had to leave the big house and move into the smaller house to pay off his debts.
Yeah. Sorry, Anne, but I do think Lady Russell is right in this particular situation.
And yeah, like, also, like, to Lady Russell's point, like, Anne might not understand it now, but it would be embarrassing for Anne to also relocate in this way, to relocate to a smaller house in the same neighborhood.
In the same neighborhood. If you move to a place like Bath, at least you can be like, oh, we wanted a change of environment, you know, we wanted to go to the coast, we wanted a little bit more of a city life, you know. But if you move into a smaller house in the same neighborhood, then it's very clear, like, oh, we're just broke, right?
Yeah, a little sea bathing would set them up for life.
Mrs. Bennet.
And with regard to Anne's dislike of Bath, Lady Russell considered it as a prejudice and mistake, arising first from the circumstance of Anne having been 3 years at school there after her mother's death, and secondly, from her happening to not be in perfectly good spirits, the only winter which she had afterwards spent there with herself.
Okay.
So here's why Lady Russell thinks Anne doesn't like Bath, is because, and why it's a mistake to dislike it, because she spent 3 years at school there when her mother died.
Jesus, that like a boarding school.
Yeah. Yeah. And secondly, because she wasn't very happy the last time she went with Lady Russell.
Right. Lady Russell's like, the only reason Anne doesn't like Bath is because she had two bad experiences there, right? And she should just get over it.
One of them probably is super traumatizing, but...
And that's a little patronizing on Lady Russell's part, I feel
like. I think it's funny. It's meant to be, it's meant to be kind of funny to us, the reader, but kind of horrifying to Anne.
Even Anne's, like, greatest ally in life is still, like, a little patronizing towards her.
Look, I know why you don't like Bath, and it's a little unfair. So what if your mother died when you spent 3 years as a child there?
That has nothing to do with Bath. Don't lie that on Bath's feet.
Lady Russell was fond of Bath, in short, and disposed to think it might suit them all. And as to her young friend's health, Anne's health, by passing all the warm months with her at Kellynch Lodge, every danger would be avoided. Let me reread that. Lady Russell was fond of Bath, in short, and disposed to think it must suit them all.
Mm-hmm.
And as to her young friend's health, by passing all the warm months with her at Kellynch Lodge, every danger would be avoided.
Okay, the sentence continues. I guess let's just talk. Well, let's just finish the sentence, I guess. Yeah.
And it was, in fact, a change which must do both health and spirits good.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this sentence a lot pre-podcast.
Right, because we were trying to figure out, so Lady Russell likes Bath and thinks it'll suit them all.
Mm-hmm.
And as to her aunt's health, by passing all the warm months with her at Kellynch Lodge, every danger would be avoided. So by passing all the warm months with Anne at Kellynch Hall, every danger would be avoided regarding her young friend's health.
Yeah.
What are these dangers?
We did research. We can't quite tell. This might not be right. So big disclaimer here. Yeah. My interpretation is, you know, Regency era people are very, like, strange and finicky as to, like, how weather affects health. And it is true that you would mostly go to these seaside resorts in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Lady Russell's just like, she thinks if Anne were to spend 12 months out of the year in Bath in the summertime, it would be bad for her health.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, so in order to prevent that, Anne will come stay with Lady Russell in the country for, like, the summertime, right?
Right.
So she'll have, like, a balanced, like, environment. It'll be good for her health. She'll get to be by the sea in the winter and in the country in the summer.
Yeah. And it goes, because then it goes on to say, and it was, in fact, a change which must do both health and spirits good.
Mm-hmm.
So the variety is good. The change of scenery, the change of air, it'll do good for Anne's health.
Yeah, and I think Lady Russell thinks that it's probably not good for Anne that she is in the same exact environment 12 months out of the year, right?
Yeah, completely ignored, no less, by her own family.
Okay.
But if you guys know what other interpretation this could be, please let us know.
Ultimately, it's not that important. But I think that's kind of something to do with it. It's just like, it's good to have the change in scenery and variety and, like, landscapes and weather and whatnot and climate.
Yeah. Okay, and then it continues to say, Anne had been too little from home, too little seen. So she's basically like a hermit.
Right.
Her spirits were not high. A larger society would improve them. Lady Russell wanted Anne to be more known.
And then there's, I like these sentences. Anne had been a little too, had been too little from home. She had left home too little. Too little seen by other people, right? Mm-hmm. Her spirits were not high.
So they were low.
Yeah, a larger society would improve them. And Lady Russell wanted Anne to be more known by society, right? What is, like, the subtext of a lot of these sentences?
Lady Russell wants Anne to, like, find a husband.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, barely Sir Walter and Elizabeth even remember Anne exists. So, like, society at large must also, like, barely remember Anne exists. Lady Russell wants her to be, like, a figure in society. Mm-hmm. Want people to be like, hey, there's a available girl here.
Right, exactly. Remember, Anne doesn't go to London with Sir Walter and Elizabeth. She's probably not going to these balls of credit that Elizabeth is opening.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So if you never leave the house, you're not going to meet a husband.
Nope.
And Lady Russell wants Anne to get married.
Yeah, because she loves her. Uh-huh. She's the favorite. The undesirableness of any other house in the same neighborhood for Sir Walter was certainly much strengthened by one part, and a very material part of the scheme, which had been happily engrafted on the beginning.
Happily for Mr. Shepherd, I believe.
He was not only to quit his home, but to see it in the hands of others. Mm-hmm. A trial of fortitude, which stronger heads than Sir Walter's have found too much. This is a joke.
Yes, stronger heads. Here's just another instance of Sir Walter's dumb, right? And weak too.
Yeah, and weak-willed. Yeah.
So the real reason, other than the insult of like moving to a smaller house in your same neighborhood, that Sir Walter cannot do that is because part of this plan is they're gonna have to rent out Kelly and Chawl.
Right.
And Sir Walter does not have the strength to see someone other than him living in it, right?
And this is almost patronizing to say, you know, this trial of fortitude, which stronger heads than Sir Walter's have found too much. Like,
that's tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
The trial of fortitude. Like, Austin doesn't really think that's a trial of fortitude, but it would be for Sir Walter, right?
Right, yeah. Like, maybe, like, Jane Austen will concede that, like, it is hard to watch your house be let. But it's not a trial of fortitude, and, like, to say that there are stronger heads than Sir Walter is a joke.
Uh-huh. I think it's saying, like, there are other ridiculous, like, baronets, but Sir Walter just happens to be the most ridiculous.
Yeah. So, yeah, Kelly and Chawl was to be let.
Uh-huh.
This, however, was a profound secret, not to be breathed beyond their own circle.
Okay.
Well, I mean, eventually the news will come out, but right now it's hush-hush.
Yeah, no one can know their plan to let Kelly and Chawl, which creates some problems. We'll talk about it in the next paragraph.
We have to rent out this house, but no one must know that we are renting out this house.
Sir Walter could not have borne the degradation of being known to design letting his house. More like the disgrace of, like, having to retrench. The degradation of letting my house, right?
Well, to design letting his house.
To, like, even, like, think about it, right?
Yeah, that this was his idea.
Mr. Shepherd had at once mentioned the word Mr. Shepherd had once mentioned the word advertise, but never dared approach it again. Sir Walter spurned the idea of its being offered in any manner, forbade the slightest hint being dropped of his having such an intention, and it was only on the supposition of his being spontaneously solicited by some most unexceptionable applicant on his own terms and as a great favor that Sir Walter would let Kelly Inch at all.
I love that.
Okay, yeah, so Sir Walter, Mr. Shepherd mentions, hey, maybe we should advertise Kelly Inch.
How dare you? That's a working man's word.
Yeah, I can imagine. Sir Walter does not advertise.
And I bet Sir Walter said that. Sir Walter does not advertise.
Yeah, he forbade the slightest hint of it being dropped and of his having such an intention. Like, you don't even say it. Like, don't even mention it. And the only way that Sir Walter would ever rent out Kelly Inch is on the supposition of his being spontaneously solicited by some most unexceptionable applicant on his own terms and as a great favor.
As a great favor.
So in Sir Walter's brain, this is the circumstance that will lead to him renting Kelly and Chawl. He's at, like, a fashionable party. Someone spontaneously mentions it without him saying anything. Hey, can I rent Kelly and Chawl? And I'll give you a lot of money, and I'll do whatever you'll say, and also I'll consider it a great favor from you, Sir Walter, to me, yeah. This lowly, unexceptionable tenant.
Exactly. Like, Sir Walter himself needing to let Kelly and Chawl, like, needing to pay off his debts, will only let it if he feels that he is doing someone else a huge solid, a huge favor by deigning to let them live in Kellyanch Hall.
And remember, it in Sir Walter's brain, it's got to be someone of, like, rank and class, probably. An unexceptionable tenant, right?
Right.
Like, someone who is, like, almost like Sir Walter, but a little bit lower than himself, maybe.
Right. No one can, like, make waves. Like, God forbid, a country farmer.
Yeah, no social climbers. And that's so funny. It's just such a, so absurd, like... The only way he'll rent it out is if someone just happens to mention it with no, like, indication that it could be rented. I don't know. Okay. And then it goes on. How quick come the reasons for approving what we like?
That's funny.
Yeah, this is just Austin. Austin, like, sort of maxim. Once we like something, then we start thinking of more reasons why it's a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
How quick come the reasons for approving what we like? Lady Russell had another excellent one at hand.
Excellent reason.
That's right. For being extremely glad that Sir Walter and his family were to remove from the country.
Okay, so besides just being able to pay back the debt, Lady Russell has another reason that this is such a great idea.
So we're going to put finding a renter on the back burner for a second. We'll figure that out when Sir Walter, like, comes to his senses.
Yeah.
But there's another reason why Lady Russell's glad that they're leaving the neighborhood, yeah, right? Like, the area.
Yeah, yeah.
Elizabeth had been lately forming an intimacy... which Lady Russell wished to see interrupted.
Hmm.
It was with a daughter of Mr. Shepherd, who had returned after an unprosperous marriage to her father's house with the additional burthen of two children.
Love that burthen of children.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, there's another reason Lady Russell wants to get Elizabeth out of Kellyanch, and that's because one of Mr. Shepherd's daughters has been hanging around a little too much, right?
Yeah, being a little too, getting a little too close with the family.
Uh-huh, who had returned after an unprosperous marriage to her father's house with the additional burthen of two children. And they didn't get divorced. He died.
Yeah.
That would never really happen at this time.
Right.
So, yeah, he...
So unprosperous, probably just, like, they did not really, as a married couple, they didn't really, like, excel beyond, like... what they already were.
I think both means that it wasn't a very happy marriage, and this daughter, who will soon be named, didn't get any money out of it.
Right.
Unprosperous, so he didn't really leave her any money. And she's living in her father's
exactly.
home, which is another indication that this guy...
should go back home.
Yeah, yeah. With children. The additional burthen. The first burden is that he left her no money, I think.
Yeah.
The additional one is two children.
Two little rugrats.
Okay, this woman, this daughter of Mr. Shepherd, was a clever young woman. Mm. Clever is not a good term. It's like manipulative, basically. And she's Mr. Shepherd's daughter, so we should expect no less. She was a clever young woman who understood the art of pleasing, at least, at Kellyanch Hall,
mm.
and had made herself so acceptable to Miss Elliot, Elizabeth, as to have been already staying there more than once, in spite of all that Lady Russell, who thought it a friendship quite out of place, could hint of caution and reserve.
Hmm.
Let's just say her name is Mrs. Clay. That's going to make it easier. The daughter of Mr. Shepherd, who is forming this intimacy with Elizabeth, is Mrs. Clay.
Yes, Mrs. Clay, the widow, the daughter of Mr. Shepherd, has somehow become BFFs with Elizabeth Elliot. And Lady Russell does not like this one bit.
I love this. Understood the art of pleasing. The art of pleasing, at least, at Kellyanch Hall.
So, yeah, it's like she's not... It's like it would be almost too much to her credit to be, like, actually good at the art of pleasing. She is good at the art of pleasing at Kellyanch Hall, specifically.
Hey, like, father, like, daughter.
Yeah, you're right. I could read a whole book about Mr. Shepherd and
Mrs. Clay,
actually.
And this is, we talked about this in the last podcast, you know, attorney is not a very high position in life. If you have to work for your money, you are kind of low. I'm sorry to say you are, like, lower on the social scale.
Unfortunately, yeah.
So it's acceptable to, you know, the ultimate royalist, Lady Russell. Well, she is a royalist, not the ultimate, that's Sir Walter. But it's acceptable for Mr. Shepherd to work for Sir Walter. But it's not acceptable for Mr. Shepherd's daughter to be friends with Elizabeth.
Right.
Because she is too low in, like, the social ranking.
Yeah. Well, not only is she low, but she's a widow, a poor widow with two
right.
kids.
Right. Yeah, so. Yeah. Who is, like, very, you know, she understands the art of pleasing. She's clever. You know, she's very ingratiating. Lady Russell doesn't trust her.
No, Mrs. Clay is a social climber.
Uh-huh.
The worst sin you could commit. Social climb.
Stay in your class.
In Lady Russell's eyes.
In Lady Russell's eyes, not in Austin's.
No.
All right. You want to read this next paragraph?
Well, not that she even, not that Jane Austen is condoning social climbing, but she certainly is not going to, she doesn't fault it the same way that Lady Russell does.
I think Lady, now you've got me doing it.
Sorry.
I think Jane Austen, it's safe to say, does not like Mrs. Clay. I think she, it is safe to say you should be distrustful of Mrs. Clay.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think Austen, approves of the idea of social climbing when it's done respectably.
Yeah.
Like in Pride and Prejudice,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like that's a real marriage, and if one of the consequences is that the Bennets like materially climb.
If you're
society,
social climbing
yeah.
on the ladder of love, then it's okay. But if it's to get ahead, then that's not okay.
And we'll see some good social climbing too mm-hmm. in this
yes,
book.
Yeah.
yeah. And also Austen doesn't think that like We'll get into it. You know, Austen doesn't think that you shouldn't, like, you should only marry people of your own class. She's just saying, like, maybe we should be a little distrustful of this Mrs. Clay, right?
Exactly. Okay, Lady Russell, indeed, had scarcely any influence with Elizabeth, and seemed to love her rather because she would love her than because Elizabeth deserved it.
That's great. She just loves Elizabeth because she loves the family,
yeah.
not because Elizabeth has done anything to worthy of this love.
Lady Russell had never received from Elizabeth more than outward attention. Nothing beyond the observances of complaisance, had never succeeded in any point which she wanted to carry against previous inclination.
Against Elizabeth's previous inclination.
So Lady Russell really has no persuasion over Elizabeth.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's a good way. Yeah, she has no influence over Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Elizabeth does whatever she wants, and she doesn't think about Lady Russell in the least bit.
Lady Russell had been repeatedly very earnest in trying to get Anne included in the visit to London, sensibly open to all the injustice and all the discredit of the selfish arrangements which shut her out, and on many lesser occasions had endeavored to give Elizabeth the advantage of her own better judgment, of Lady Russell's own better judgment and experience.
Like some advice, right?
But always in vain. Elizabeth would go her own way. She never had... And never had she pursued it in more decided opposition to Lady Russell than in this selection of Mrs. Clay.
Mm-hmm.
Turning from the society of so deserving a sister to bestow her affection and confidence on one who ought to have been nothing more but the object of distant civility.
All right. So there's a double whammy here for Lady Russell. One, she just doesn't like Mrs. Clay, and she doesn't think it's right for someone of Elizabeth's like status to be associating with her, really.
Mm-hmm.
And two, Lady Russell is extra offended because Elizabeth is, like, spurning Anne's society for the society of this woman who she doesn't like, right?
Right.
That adds, like, the insult to injury.
Yeah, someone that Elizabeth Mrs. Clay ought to have been nothing more but the object of distant civility
mm-hmm.
to Elizabeth. And yet, Mrs. Clay is, like, the preferred company over Elizabeth's own sister,
right.
Anne.
And also, it's good. It's nice to know at least someone tried to stick up for Anne in these London trips, even though
yeah.
she wasn't attended to for one second.
It is pretty offensive that, like, father and daughter are going off to London and then with another friend and just excluding another member of their own family.
It's a bad look. It's not a good look at all.
But Sir Walter, I guess, is too foolish to realize how bad a look it is.
I think it's because he can see past his own, or like he is blinded by how pleasing Mrs. Clay is
to him.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's why he's okay with her being around.
Well, we'll see more of Mrs. Clay, but yeah, Mrs. Clay is what is it? She is understood the art of pleasing.
Yeah.
So.
Especially the art of pleasing in Elliot.
Yeah, exactly. Anne doesn't please Sir Walter.
Right. And maybe that's part of the reason he doesn't like her is that, I don't know. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. But anyway, yes. So this is, Lady Russell's like, this is extra good that they're getting away from the area because they gotta get away from Mrs. Clay, right? And it's doubly offensive to me that Elizabeth hangs out with Mrs. Clay when she should be spending time with her sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or that even in deciding to do so, Elizabeth and Sir Walter are depriving society of Anne.
Uh-huh.
That, like as a result, Anne doesn't even get to participate in society.
That's true. They're elevating this Mrs. Clay and, like, demoting their own daughter, basically, relegating her to, I don't know, like,
non-existence.
Isolation.
Yeah,
isolation. Non-existence in society.
Right. Okay, last paragraph here. From situation, Mrs. Clay was, in Lady Russell's estimate, a very unequal. So in terms of her situation in society, Lady Russell thinks that Mrs. Clay is an unequal.
An unequal, I love it.
A very to the unequal. Elliots,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, no, well, it goes on to say, uh-huh. A very unequal, and in her character, she believed, a very dangerous companion.
An unequal and dangerous companion.
Yeah, right? Mrs. Clay is. And a removal that would leave Mrs. Clay behind and bring a choice of more suitable intimates within Miss Elizabeth's reach, mm-hmm. was therefore an object of first-rate importance.
Okay.
So that's interesting. Above everything else, it seems like the first rate is implying that above everything else that moving to Bath would fix, the number one thing in Lady Russell's mind is that way Anne can be integrated into society.
Right. And what are the dangers that Mrs. Clay poses?
Well, first of all, it's just not a good look for the Elliot family that Mrs. Clay, that this like random poor girl
widow,
is like,
yeah.
widow, this poor widow who was presumably leaving her children at home. It's just hanging around this like prestigious aristocratic family. And also therefore like taking the place of Anne, an actual like Elliot.
Right.
And secondly, what's a single woman doing hanging around this man?
This widower.
This widow and this widower hanging out.
Mm. Yeah, I think the dangers are implicit there.
Yeah.
And also, I love the name. Like Mr. Shepherd, Mrs. Clay. Very evocative. Sounds like dirt, first of all. Like
you're
Mrs.
Right.
Earth, Mrs. Dirt. Yeah. It's like low, but it's also like biblical in a way.
I guess so.
Like
yeah.
She's very, like she is human, Mrs. Clay. She's very.
No, she is not. She has not been
touched.
She
has sheets of clay, yeah.
Yeah, she has not been touched by God in the same way that the Elliots have been. She is lowly and dirt.
Of the earth, yeah.
Yeah, she's of the earth. So that's chapter two.
And designing. And kind of like clay. It's like designing.
You're right. Yeah, kinda, she's kind of like, she can mold herself to be whatever the Elliots want her to be.
Oh, there you go.
If anyone else has more interpretations of clay, please let us know.
Hey, is it going too far to say Russell kind of sounds like, to like rustle something into place, to like persuade?
Yeah, to like rustle up some plans
maybe
together.
That's pushing it.
Or maybe like Russell, like noise, like she's kind of like getting into the Elliot's business, maybe getting into Anne's business.
It's a good name. It's less like literal than Shepherd or Clay, but I still think it fits her.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we should close
it there.
Yeah. But we forgot to mention this last time.
Yeah, we have an email address. Mm-hmm. it is going to be the same as the first podcast. So if you have questions, comments, suggestions for other topics that we can talk about, any clarifications, you can email us at secondimpressionspod@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening, everyone. We're so excited to be doing this next book with you all.
Back in action. I said this last podcast, but I do feel bad for leaving a lot of people hanging. I know you guys were waiting for this, for like any word from that we're alive. So we are indeed doing Persuasion. It's very exciting.
All right. Okay. Well, so till next time.
Yep. I'm Grace.
And I'm Tom.
Bye.